Hi, this is Dougal Jeppy with my first podcast, the Office Space Podcast. And my guest today is Charlotte Timms. She is a director with Workplace Advisory Group at Colliers International out of the Chicago office. Welcome, Charlotte.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Charlotte, can you tell me something about yourself? Maybe give us a little background, and over the last few years.
Yeah, of course. I'm happy to. So thanks so much for the introduction. So as Dougal said, I am based here in Chicago. You might be able to tell from my accent, I'm originally from the UK. So I started out my career there, trained as a chartered surveyor, worked for a company called Deloitte for many years, working with landlords, tenants, everything from brokerage to valuation to lease advisory. Then went to work for a property technology company in London who are scaling really quickly in the flexible space. And then for the last 3 or 4 years, I've been working in Chicago in the workplace advisory team. So working with companies to really help them understand that power of place and how we can really help create workspaces that better enable business and empower people and create, places where people really want to be.
Great. Well, it sounds like you have a wonderful wide range of experience. And can you talk about workplace strategy a little bit? And is this a newer concept? How did it evolve? And what does it really mean?
Yeah, great question. It's a term that's been around for absolutely years. I mean, workplace strategy goes back, probably 40, 50 years. It's certainly become more of a hot topic, so to speak, in more recent years. And really what it is, it's about taking a people-centered approach to space. So if we think about space, really, what does it need to do? It needs to function for people. So it's a people-centered approach, and we think about it from a business first perspective. So when I come in and talk to a company, I'm speaking with leaders and trying to understand actually what are those business goals? Where are they trying to go as a company? Where do they want to be now in the future? What are their metrics around costs? Are they hiring? Are they growing? So only when we understand all those business goals and how the space needs to function for people can we get to the space solution.
So, workplace strategy sounds like it's really at the beginning stage of the process, and occupiers slash tenants slash companies that lease office space will have a variety of advisors working with them, from brokers to architects to construction managers. How does workplace strategy really differ from, let's say, what an architect offers? And how do you interact with architects? Because it seems like there's some similarities between the design of the space and how people work within the space. Can you talk about that?
Of course, I think that's really true. Just to say at the beginning, we love architects and we work with them the whole time. But the way in which we do interact is slightly different, as you kind of alluded to. So I agree the strategy bit really comes in at the beginning. It's one of the first things we really think about and do. So even before a transaction actually takes place, and we often partner with brokers like yourself and come up with a strategy as one of the first things that we do for a company because it helps us actually right size, ensure that we're committing to the right space. So in terms of a linear process, it tends to go, workplace strategy, brokerage, bring the PM team in, and then closer to the end of a deal, so to speak, when a lease has been agreed, we will help bring an architect on board, work with the architect to ensure that everything we've learned in strategy, all the great data that we've collected, that all that strategy piece actually helps inform design. So we partner with everyone throughout the process and we partner with the architect at the end. We will often oversee that design process, but we want to make sure that while strategy informs design, we leave the architect to do all the brilliant stuff that they're, which is their expertise and have that kind of creative direction on it. But we oversee that process to make sure actually it's that data, it's that strategy that's informing design, not just great design concepts and trends that we see in the industry. So it's kind of a really integral and important piece in that sense.
Great, that makes sense. And what types of companies and what size of companies, either in, you know, number of people in an office, or what are those metrics that you look for or companies should think about that would make sense to utilize a workplace strategist in the process?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And we work with so many different companies. We work from everyone from the big corporate companies like you'd expect, but also when your company's going through rapid change, I think bringing a strategist on board, or at least having that conversation, can be really valuable, because we're trying to ensure that we're future-proofing, you know, the business and space. So one of the companies which I worked with relatively recently, about a month or so ago, out of Boston, they're actually a fast-growth startup. So they're actually only at, you know, 50, 60, 70 people, but they're looking to scale to 250 people over the next year, which is huge growth and really important. If we think about an office, you know, they're in however many thousand square foot at the moment. How do they plan for that massive growth, and what does that mean for them for space? So that was a really interesting conversation with them, and we've come up with some, you know, some cool concepts to make sure that space works, and some good mechanisms that the brokers come up with in the lease over the next couple of years to ensure that, you know, they can sublet parts of it, and then when they need that space, they have the right to regain it. So it's been a real partnership in that sense, and we got some great solutions for them. So hopefully that helps there.
Good. Yeah, I like so rapid change and future proofing. Those are two key terms to think about. Speaking of rapid change, we are going through a rapid change right now, obviously, mm-hmm. with the pre and post COVID. So if you could talk for a minute about trends, let's say, you saw before COVID in the office space, and then what trends you see now and really having staying power in the foreseeable future, with the caveat being that no one knows what the future is going to look like, but you have some really good insight, I'm sure, into what we could learn from history and what to think about in the future.
Sure. I'm glad you said that last bit, because I am not in the business of predicting the future. However, there are some really interesting trends. The first one I'll talk about is really around sizing. Over the mm-hmm. last, you know, in the work you do as well, over the last, you know, 5, 3, 2 years, we're certainly seeing square footage per person coming down, people being more adventurous with space, trying to fit more people into less space. As a very broad rule of thumb, thinking about co-working spaces. I know, you know, we work, for example, in London, they were as tight as like 30 square foot per person, which is tiny. But I think that trend of reducing square footage, I think in the immediate future, people are certainly going to be more cautious about. But really ensuring companies have access to the right space and multifunctional space, I do think will be important. But just because of the situation that we're in at the moment, and rightly so, with social distancing, etc., I think people are going to be really, really cautious about that. And there's certainly protocols that we need to put in place in the immediate future to make sure that our space can still function, whether or not that's reducing the capacity, etc. So that's one thing around sizing. I think in the immediate future, we're going to see a shift there. The second one is really around distributed work and work from home strategy. Although this situation is completely awful, it's kind of interesting that we've had really the biggest distributed work experiment ever of all time. So what's mm-hmm. interesting is companies I've been working with just say, no, we can't work in a distributed manner. It won't work, et cetera, et cetera. Actually, I'm speaking to them now. And of course, some, for certain reasons, it's really not working and they can't wait to get back in the office. But others are saying, actually, I'm surprised. It actually really works. So for those companies where they say, actually, we've asked people how it's going, we've gathered the data, for some of our teams it works, they're thinking, actually, we need to readdress our strategy going forward, because maybe distributed work for certain parts of the business may be in our strategy going forward. So again, how does that then affect space? How much space do we need? How do we communicate with those teams that are distributed? What does that mean for culture? What does that mean for technology, brand, etc.? So that's the second one around distributed work. And then thirdly, the trend around power of place. As a strategist, we talk about power of place a lot. And what I mean by mm-hmm. that is the power in attracting people to come to a space because, you know, what's the purpose of being there? They come because there's this magnetic field. They want to be around people. They can do better business there, etc. And I think that power of place may shift. If, for example, people can work in a more distributed fashion, then what is that power of place? Maybe people come together to really learn, to connect, to problem solve. And if that is the reason we come together, the space we come to is very different. It's not just cubes and offices. It's a very different dynamic space. So that, I don't think that's immediate. It might be a bit further in the future, but that's something we're having a lot of conversations about at the moment. I find really interesting.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Well, definitely a grand experiment here in the work from yes. home and the distributed workforce. So as companies start thinking about re-entering the workforce to some form, you know, to some capacity, I've heard very few companies saying, for example, in Chicago, come June 1st, they're going to have everyone back. It's a much staged approach. Some companies are thinking about delaying it later and not necessarily thinking they need to come right back into the office because it will change and the whole building entrance will change, et cetera. But in the meantime, what can companies do now to prepare for their re-entry into the workforce, into the workspace? Excuse me.
I'm glad you asked that. We're having this conversation with a lot of people at the moment. The first thing I would say is just check in with your people. Like, how's everyone doing? And if we don't ask, mm-hmm. we don't know. But what we do know is when you're working in a distributed team and working remotely, communication is key. So I think the data that we can collect now to figure out actually how are people doing at home, whether that's good, bad, ugly, we need to know that to make sure that we can plan better for the future. So that's the first one I say, check in with your mm-hmm. people and communicate. Secondly, assess your workspace so you know what you're coming back to. And I do not want this to be a shameless plug for any of our tools. But just to give a bit of color on that, we've developed a new tool at the moment called our Back to Work Navigator tool. And that is going through an office space with our broker or a company, doing a video so we can actually help them think about what do they need to do to make sure that space is ready for people to return. So thinking about touchless technology, cleaning, sanitizing, simple things like clean desk policy, but anything you can do now to make sure you're prepared for when that day comes is a good thing. Another example might be mm-hmm. reducing some capacity in meeting rooms, because it's all around ensuring people feel safe to come back when they choose as well. So I agree with you. I think that phased approach is going to be big. We just need to make sure that we're mm-hmm. kind of ready to execute as and when we need to. But the last thing I would say is for companies where distributed work and remote work is working, in one sense, there's no rush to get back to the office. Of course, we all want to get back to this element of normal at some point. But really, we're looking at those people who it's really critical for them to be there right now, who needs to get back immediately for business to function.
Right.
So I think it will be a phased approach, and I think it will be quite slow. And if that means that we don't have a resurgence, then that is the right thing to do.
Okay. And if we're using China, parts of Asia as examples right now in terms of how they re-enter the workforce, are there any lessons learned from what we're seeing right now, as they're doing it kind of trial by error.
We held a webinar the other day, actually. I don't know if you were able to listen to it. And it was a global webinar, so with our global team. And my colleague Trudy out of Asia was sharing some of her stories and experiences. So I'll kind of try and recall them the best I can. But they are doing a lot of temperature checking. In many cases, you're having to record your temperature like twice a day, report it to a doctor, then getting a doctor's note to say, okay, you're safe to return to the office. We're seeing masks being mandatory in all spaces, reduced occupancy, so reduced capacity like 50, 30, 40% of a space's capacity. Also, there's quite a lot of learnings from like the restaurant and retail industry in China. So again, around that capacity thing. So ensuring social distancing is being adhered to, blocking off spaces it shouldn't be sat at. And also holding each other accountable, which I think is a huge part of it. So, you know, looking out for each other and saying, actually, like, no, we shouldn't be doing that. Like, the rules are here right now to ensure everyone is safe, and we have to do our best to abide by them.
Right. Yeah, it seems that the idea of being a good citizen, I think it's easier to some degree when you have a government telling everyone how to do something. It makes things a lot easier, less choice. They dictate how you enter buildings, et cetera. But in the United States, for example, where all the buildings are you know, privately held, it's their decisions. And being the litigious society that we are, a lot of people, tenants, property owners, don't want to take on the liability of temperature checks, for example, in case something goes wrong. And I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But hopefully, you know, through all this, we can come, you know, better together as a society and manage it, just being good citizens. So we shall see. All right. I just have one more question for you on this topic. And if you were a company and we know of a lot of these, most of the companies, quite frankly, if you were a company with limited time, limited budget, what is the most impactful thing you could do to make your workspace better? And I realize better could mean productivity. It could be health, wellness, a number of things. But from your perspective, under those constraints, what is the most impactful thing you could do?
So right, limited now? Time and limited budget. I like it. It's a good question. I would say, let's remember that spaces are there to function for people. So the first thing I would say is communicate and check in with your people, because what information you gather there is so valuable to understand what you need to do to your space to make it work and function for your people. So check in and communicate. That's a very cost-effective solution. And the second one I would say is around refreshing your workplace protocols, which I think I touched on earlier as well. So by protocols, I'm thinking about, you know, rules around sanitation, potentially looking at a route when you enter and exit your building. This is talking, you know, short term, really, around not having huge gatherings or all hands meetings for a while, encouraging employees to have virtual meetings where they can. In terms of kind of impactful things that are relatively cost effective and easier to implement, I think they're the two I'd go with.
Okay, communicate and workplace protocol. Perfect. Sounds good. Well, Charlotte, thank you for your time and being my first guest, which will hopefully be many more, for the Office Space podcast. And stay well.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.